Stand Up Club. I'm Andrew Whipple.
I'm Alex Wade.
Here we are. We're thriving in the fall.
Fall time. I feel you feel like a fall person.
That yes, feels like 100%. Fall and winter. Yeah. That's the jam.
Yeah. That's what I think of. Of the two, like I'm the summer and spring. You're the fall and winter.
Yes.
No, I would. The dog person. You're the cat person.
Yep. You know, exactly. That's what makes it such a great podcast.
Exactly.
Especially Salt given that then we agree on 99% of all the things that we discuss every episode.
Yes.
But that's not what we're here to talk about. What are we here to talk about today, Alex Wade?
It's a good off-the-cuff question right there, Andrew Whipple. We are here to talk about success and its meaning. I had this idea a couple of weeks ago of just, you know, going through life. I finished up those three shows that I did this summer and just felt good about myself. And I was like, I'm feeling good and I want to talk about the things that I'm doing right now and how, what is that defined as versus what other people see it as, I guess, or like societally or personally, just generally, like what is success and what does it mean to you? Yeah.
An interesting and thorny question that one is.
Money. That's the answer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in an interesting, probably similar to you, transitional period, I think, in some of my own personal definitions of success, that, as discussed on many previous episodes, have gone through a couple different tangential career changes, but career changes nonetheless over the course of the existence of this show. Any sort of career transition will probably have some impact on feelings of success in the career space in particular. But I think the thing that's sort of been hitting more, especially over the last couple of years, is if you had asked me, let's say, in end of high school or through most of early college, I think I would have had a very career-focused notion of success, and that career focus would have been in some sort of artistic realm. It would have been the idea that, like, you maybe have some day job, but like eventually I get to the point where I think always then it was still less focused on monetary success, but was more focused on having significant artistic success out in the world as like doing artistic stuff that some critical mass of people are very proud of and think, oh, wow, that's really cool. And it's a good thing that Andrew exists doing this art so that that stuff could exist. Probably in the realm of like theater or screenwriting or writing more generally. And that definitely has faded, certainly a significant amount compared to college, in that like I certainly don't think at any point I will have I'd be very surprised if I ever have a like artistic career as opposed to doing like more sort of normal jobby job stuff. But yeah, and I don't know. There is some element of like, sometimes, depending on when you ask me, does that feel like failure or does that feel like, you know, your definition of success has just changed?
And yeah. I don't know. I think that's something that's also hard to personally reconcile, is this idea of, oh, what I once wanted or was aiming for, am I fooling myself and settling and pretending like my definition of success has changed? Or have I just matured and grown older and started to understand that, you know, it doesn't have to be, I'm on my own journey and like, that's okay, you know?
Yeah. A sort of interesting attacking that from both sides. On the one hand, there has been the part of me that with the writers and actors strike happening in Hollywood, especially back when I was like a senior year of high school, you asked me, I think what I want to do is I want to try and become a Hollywood screenwriter. That is as close to a goal as I probably had back then. And then seeing both through the material circumstances with which Hollywood screenwriters have to deal with in their livelihoods. And then also sort of seeing that like, even for as much as there was that, there was also like in the back of my head or feeling just no connection to that as a thing that I could plausibly do or a group I could ever plausibly be a part of. Like that was sort of a big turning point that I'm like, oh, no, I will never be one of those, I don't think. In some ways, weight left off the shoulder. In other ways, like, oh, that's a little bit sad. Yeah. But that sort of happening at the same time as, in counterpoint, my brother getting basically what is his dream job, which working in the film industry in a thing that he's always particularly wanted to do. But like seeing that and seeing after so many years of him not giving up and then getting an artistic thing that he had been aiming for, then there's that other flip side of like, oh, well, yeah. You could also not give up. And if you didn't give up, then who knows where things could go. And being in the unsettled nature of both of those happening around the same time, and specifically not both being specifically related to the specific goals that I had, but close enough to sort of give a shove.
That's, I think, something, I mean, obviously for me, if like I am pursuing my artistic passions and endeavors, which does make me better than you, but that's neither here nor there.
You joke. I mean, there are times when I think that. I know that's not actually true, and I know that you obviously don't actually mean it that way, but there is definitely part of the time where I'm like, that's very cool. It's a thing that I do think that you have that is actually a thing that I want to emulate and get better at is you do have much more commitment and drive to get stuff done in a way that I don't.
Sure.
Especially that I don't for extracurriculars of like, I can put in a fair amount of work at work, but like just every single one of these, how you do in pandemic check-in episodes, like the constant running thing is the like, yeah, I wanted to put a lot of work into a thing. And then what I decided to do instead was not do that. And so I do think that do not sell yourself short. There is definitely something to be admired and emulated in when there are things that you do put your energy into, you put a lot of energy into it. Yeah. And that is admirable.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. That was at our 10-year high school reunion. There was kind of this moment of seeing the forest through the trees of the endless actor struggle of, oh, I'm auditioning and not getting parts, or I'm doing unpaid bit parts for this small theater company that just started, or I'm doing another student film or something like that. That when I went back to our 10-year reunion, I just got a lot of praise and being like, Alex, you're trying to be an actor. You're not trying, you're doing it. You're doing the thing in New York City. That's so cool. And I was like, yeah, I am doing that, aren't I? You know, it was a very good feeling. And then the flip side of that is, so I was in this short film about a year or two ago that won some like cool awards, which was lovely. And somehow someone from our year actually mentioned it to the Alumni Association. And they said, hey, can we put this in our magazine? And I was like, yeah, sure, go for it. There's a little blurb about me and what I'm doing right now. And then right after me, there is someone else who is the year below us. And they are much, much, much more. It's funny. I was going to say much more successful, but in the context of this episode, I don't know if that's the appropriate word to use. Yeah, but they've been in Netflix shows. They are currently on like a prequel to another famous show with very, very famous, successful actors. And, you know, that I am very proud of them. They're doing phenomenally. They're a great, great person. I don't know why I'm being vague about this. Like, it's Julia is the person you can keep.
Yeah, she's
in
a trillion times more famous and successful than we will ever be.
Yeah,
like, who listens to this podcast that doesn't probably know her?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a tendency to like, oh, try and like remove your
try
personal
and anonymize,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, she's doing fucking phenomenally. Very happy for her. It's just when that is literally put right after me on the alumni, like notable alumni things and their lives going on right now. And it's very hard. It is impossible not to compare myself in that situation when she is literally side by side in a picture of like me in like a grainy-ish photo of my 10-minute film that I was in versus her like Netflix promotional picture, you know?
Yeah.
Which it's funny because like I, outside of the context of this episode, I would absolutely say she is more successful than me. I guess that's kind of what I want to explore is like, what does that mean in this situation and in all situations? And there's personal success and there's comparing success. And it's, I think, in a similar way of, oh, I have very different definitions of success than I had when I was in high school or college. And like, I was very, very much like, I want to make money. That is My first goal going to college is to find my passion. If that doesn't work out, I'll find something that makes me a lot of money. And like, that is what I was more aiming for. I was like, if I happen to find my passion, great. But money is the thing, you know? And it wasn't until like halfway through college when I was like, I got to do this acting thing. Unfortunately, sorry, money, but you're not feeding the soul. That's crazy. The old adages of money doesn't buy happiness are not, they don't apply to me. What? That's ridiculous. You know,
that's interesting. Like thinking that has got me thinking through college, because post college, and I think still true to this point, there's like, when it comes to career success, I've had an interesting relationship with it because, as I think we've talked about previously, having the, I've always sort of seen my tech career as being a, unlike my parents who are both doctors and they both really love it. And like they are, I've heard my mom talk about like when she retires, what she wants to do is to like do these programs where you like get flown out for 3 to 4 weeks to help do like rural medicine stuff in places that don't have enough doctors. Like she likes the act of being a doctor so much that when she no longer wants to do it as her career, she wants to do it as a hobby, which is very cool and very admirable. And I think my dad is similar there, maybe even less so than my mom though. But, I've never felt that way about certainly anything in the tech industry, and never had the inclination that I would probably feel that way about other sort of more normal job type stuff. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe there is some job out there somewhere that is still a relatively normal job, but has that level of dedication to it, or level of potential dedication to it. I have felt that way about like doing artistic stuff, like doing theatrical work to the equivalent of a part-time or full-time at some cases job during college. It's like, oh yeah, you're doing that because you like doing it a lot. But I've never felt that way about anything in the tech industry. And that's always been, I felt very good about that, in that that does, I think, genuinely give you some element of power in a career that like you
can leave a job.
Yeah. When you can leave, when you can walk away, like that is power that can help you define boundaries and say like, great, I don't want to answer emails after 5. What are you going to do? Fire me? Okay, great. I don't, or you're not promote me. Fine. I don't love this job anyway. It's just, I guess I've always had a career focus of what is the thing that makes me the most amount of money while making me the least unhappy as possible in terms of like what I'm spending my 40 hours a week doing. And each subsequent career change has been a tweak to get closer to that, where project management, maybe a perfectly reasonable amount of money. I was able to make some good boundaries of like, it only is within the 40 hours of the work week, but I didn't like actually doing the job. I liked doing the job of product manager more than project, and it also helped that it paid more. And then same thing with developing. It's like once product management got to the point where it's like, I don't think I actually like doing this work anymore, switch to software engineering. That is a, certainly do not see it as like a career with a capital C, and definitely not like a calling or anything like that. But it's like, yeah, this is so far the best balance I found of, I enjoy doing the work when it's work time, and it lets me not do work when it's not due work time, and it pays me money to support the rest of the stuff. The one interesting thing though, is that in the back of my head up until maybe a couple years ago, it has always been the, not explicitly a day job, because it's not like I'm doing any other things outside of it to try and have an artistic career separate, but in the back of my head, always kind of still thinking of it like that, of like, well, it's a good thing that you don't see this as your calling, because that way, if you do find your calling, you can switch and go do that, or you can use this to subsidize said calling. And in the last couple of years, starting to feel like writing or theater or stuff like that, you're not really doing any of that. So maybe it is just like, it's not just that the job that is just a job is there because you'll be able to pivot into or support a writing thing. It's no, the job is just a job because that's fine in and of itself.
Yeah. Having just a life outside of, like, you don't have to have a grand aim of life.
Yeah.
I guess.
I still kind of feel like in my head that I should.
Yeah. That's hard.
Yeah.
Which, and if you want to, go for it. But, like,
yeah. Yeah, there has been, this is one thing that I'm interested in, but then also now potentially worried about, is another thing over the last like 4 years has been getting into woodworking and guitar making and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I do find myself feeling a bit of a tendency that seems similar to the way that I was feeling about writing and theater stuff a decade ago, I guess now, is it should there be more of a like always in the back of my head, like, no, always think about woodworking as it is a hobby that is fun. Put those blinders on and that will lead you to a happier life going forward, to have it as like, nope, it is just a hobby, versus like there is in the back of my head always the like, oh, if I got good at this, this is fun.
Yeah.
Could that maybe be a thing that I do? Could it maybe be a thing that like eventually makes money in and of itself? Could it be a thing that like makes money above and beyond or enough to be supporting? And would I be happier if that was the case? Would it feel more artistically fulfilled? Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. And yeah, yeah, so that's one thing in the like success area that still feeling creatively, or feeling not creatively unfulfilled, but feeling old definitions of success being ones where you have notable creative output unfulfilled. Sure. Is it a good thing if woodworking starts to fill that gap, or should the move be, no, you're falling into an old pattern, stop that, and just change your success definition? I don't know.
I think, I mean, that's something of, I know my parents have, the money thing absolutely comes from like my parents instilling desire for money in me, which is great and fine, whatever. But they have retired and they bought their own plot of land in deeper Washington. That's just a very overgrown forest that they are going to be, have been working on, you know. That's great. But the amount of times that they're talking about like, oh, we're going to be selling some of the lumber here and we're going to be making back our investments and possibly might rent it out as like a campground for people who want to come out to the wilderness for like $50 a night or something. And it's just this monetary, like, you're retired now. If you want to go work the land, have at it. But why are you doing that for the sake of money? You know, They do not need or want more money either. It's just like the act of their productivity being put towards making money feels good, if that makes sense. Yeah. And it's the amount of times I tell my parents, like, spend your money, like, just go. If you want to work the land in retirement, go for it. To what end? You know, like, if to the end of having fun working the land, great. Why are you trying to make more money out of everything? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that for you, when you make your hobbies into your job, well, then it becomes a job.
Yeah.
And it becomes work instead of a joy. I say that as someone trying to make a career out of my passion. But I mean, that's also something of like, for me, I feel like the reason why I'm trying to make a career out of it is because the best actors are the people who are doing big things. And like, the only way I'm going to work with those people is if I make a career out of it and I make it a monetary, not aimed thing, but like that is part of it, right? Of that is unfortunately one of the biggest measurements of theatrical or film sort of success and quality, frankly. Like, yeah, I can go make some cool stuff on my own or with some friends of mine, but that's not going to be the top echelon of creativity and acting that I want to pursue and work with. So I think in that sense, it's like, an unfortunate necessity for me to aim for that.
That's interesting right there, because that sort of highlights two different elements. There's the highest echelon of skill and talent as an actor. So there's the, I want to be able to work with that group, which to me sounds sort of like a, I guess, kind of thinking of success as I'm in the environment that is the most enjoyable and most fulfilling and most fun for me.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that I'd never even thought about that before, but like that, yeah, it's totally true. It's like, you have to be very good to get to work with the best people, and it's more fun to work with the best people than to not. And therefore you have to get, like, success is having that environment and the ability to participate in that environment. Then there's the other half of it, which is the being one of that highest up echelon. Do you think of it as, how much of that to you it feels like an internal motivation versus like an external thing of like, I want to know in my heart of hearts that I am that good versus I want to know in my heart of hearts that other people see me as that good?
I wouldn't say, I need to know that I'm good. Like, I know I'm good. I think it's more of, I'm tired of working with bad actors.
Okay.
I want to be the least talented person in the room. And like, I've started to get to a point now, which is, and this is like a great problem to have. This is a very arrogant episode for me, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. But of like, there are some times lately that it's been like, this was a bad production that I worked on. And like, I'm not better in the sense of like, I'm above this, but it's just, I am a better quality of actor than some of the people who I'm doing like scenes with. And it's frustrating. I want to be working with better people sometimes. And I used to, you know, my first couple years in New York, I was thrilled to get any tiny little thing. And now I feel like I'm ready to graduate to the next level. I'm still excited to get roles that are, you know, unpaid from some small theater company, but I'm ready to like progress and to, yeah. Also, even using that word of progress.
That is fun that you mentioned that, like, oh, this is going to be a very arrogant episode, because where that's the fun, like, split version of the most arrogant version of it, which is, I already know that I'm good, and I don't care about other people thinking that I'm good from the perspective of I need external validation. I care about other people thinking that I'm good so that I get to experience the best working environment for me.
Absolutely.
So it's like, it's the most arrogant and it's the least arrogant, because the other version would be, I need people to see that I'm good so that I feel the validation of people thinking that I'm good. Or I guess that would be the difference between wanting to be the least talented person in the best group or in the best project versus being the most talented or seen as most talented person among that group, which, I mean, and also like, both are fine, whatever. Everyone
whatever
it takes to get through the day. Or I guess at the end of the day, it's like, probably everyone's definition of success to some degree is success is whatever is the thing that makes me feel good about myself. And there's a trillion different definitions per person of what are those things that will fill the hole and make you feel like you're feel good about yourself. And so for some people, it'll be external validation. For other people, it'll be getting to have an enjoyable experience. For other people, it's making a ton of money, et cetera, et cetera. But, or making a ton of money to have the material benefits that money provides versus making a ton of money to be able to have a ton of money, et cetera, et cetera.
To be a dragon. I don't know. I'm rubbing against what I just said like 5 minutes ago now. Like, I do feel I'm tired of being like, I'm not always the best person in the room, but I am tired sometimes of being that. And it's, I mean, that's what's happening. I've talked to you about this before, and this one I am going to censor a little bit because I don't know where it's going to go. I am starting to join this group, this acting comedy group that's starting to get very successful right now. I'm helping out, not necessarily performing in it, but it's very interesting to see these very talented people who are working very hard and are good and are getting audiences. It is no longer just their friends coming to support them. It is now, you know, a whole bunch of strangers in the audience who heard about them and want to watch them. And that is a very good feeling to even be tangentially a part of that and to like see that it is. It's interesting because that external validation is like, it sounds, when you say it like that, it sounds needy and insecure,
Yeah.
But it's I don't want it for the praise and for people to be like, oh, Alex, you're so good. That is nice sometimes, you know, but like, I don't feel like that's why I do it.
Yeah. But, well, as you were saying that, I was thinking back to in the college theater context, and I guess high school theater as well, that like there was the validation of the general purpose audience is always great. And like, I did like that. And I liked being seen as, there was something that was very fun, especially in college, about being part of the, one of the good theater groups. Like that definitely helped that people were like, oh yeah, no, there's, you know, in the top three of the ones that are consistently very high quality and that people like to go see and blah, blah, blah. If there's people whose tastes that I trust said that something was good, it definitely would feel, in order for something like a show or a project to feel successful, I would have to personally feel like it hit a quality bar. If it wasn't very good, no matter what people said about it, it still wouldn't feel like successful if it didn't feel that way to me. But then once it does clear that bar, that's maybe where external validation would become very, a very useful extra bonus cherry on top. Maybe even a bonus cherry that ends up taking up 60% of my thoughts on the matter is that like, hey, well, that person said it was their favorite Shakespeare show that they saw in their time here at school.
I do agree with that sentiment, though, of internal validation. If I'm not proud of my work and then people are like, oh, you did such a good job, then I'm like, well, then I guess you have a bad opinion, or you had lower expectations of me and my skill than I thought you did. You know?
if you thought that was good. You can't go do a little Inception, like planting the, well, I thought it was bad, but now that you say that it's good, I guess maybe it actually is good. It's like, yeah, no, it's, I know if it's good or bad, actually, and often true in reverse, where it's like someone else says that something that you thought was good had a problem with it. And then depending on my relationship to the person and my relationship to the work would be the interesting point of how defensive would I get about a thing.
Yeah.
But being like, yeah, but you actually misunderstood this part of it.
Yeah. I actually had some friends recently, two separate groups of friends come see my show. And two of them, they were in the way back of the theater, and it was a tiny theater that the acoustics are bad, so they didn't hear 30% of the show at least. And they hated the show. Like, they ripped into it. And I was like, I thought it was like decent. Like, yeah, I know it has some certain flaws in it, but like not like the worst show you've ever seen in a black box theater in New York City level bad. And then another group of friends saw it, and they were theater people. Like they were theater friends from college, and they were like, yeah, it's got some tweaks that it needs, and, you know, cut this part out here, maybe some tightening up there, but it was good. And it was like, it was the first run of a show, the first time it had ever been done. You could tell that's what it was, but it wasn't an utter piece of garbage. And also wildly different takes of even from, there was a guy who had a British accent, and my friends were like, yeah, I could tell that they had an awful British accent. Like it sounded so fake. And then the next group of friends, one of them is British, and he was convinced that it was a real British accent.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah. I definitely trust the judgment of my theater friends far more than I do than my other friends, but it was interesting. I fortunately wasn't a big role, so like I wasn't super attached to the opinions of the performance, but it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I'm realizing there is still some element of that. For as much as I have prefaced around like, well, I don't see software engineering as a like capital C career or anything like that, I do definitely still feel validated by either me myself knowing that I do a good job or other people saying that I do a good job. And thankfully, because I do a good job and I am good at what I do, people do say that, have been saying that frequently recently, which is, I mean, yeah, it's a good feeling, and it definitely helps.
I mean, that for me also has been something I've been, I guess, not coming to terms with, I've been adjusting to more lately, is I have like, oh, I'm going to try to be an actor, and this is purely the thing to support me. And I've started lately being like, you know what? I can enjoy my job more, you know, like, even though it may or may not, oh God, I hope no one at my company listens to this part. But even though, you know, I'm still trying to be an actor, I do enjoy different parts of my job, and I'm starting to in the past. I mean, also at this company specifically, I've started to realize it's like, oh, I can enjoy my job more than it being a tool for something else, you know?
Yeah. And I think I've, where it's sort of come to me in the last year or so is, really in the last 6 months, where sort of getting the opportunity to, on this big 6 month long project, being the part of the top team of people who are doing like technical architecture for figuring out how the project is going to work, and being very instrumental in, I mean, it hasn't launched yet, but by all accounts, looks like it will, fingers crossed, hopefully be successful. You know, being someone who's fairly instrumental in that, and hearing, having people say that and say, like, you know, give praise for that. And having those people in particular being like VPs and the CTO and stuff like that, saying like, hey, good job, this is valuable, we've needed that. That has been both rewarding, just because it's nice to hear people in power say that you do a good job at a thing, but also helpful. I guess I've been starting to think of it as, this is valuable because I know that I don't see software engineering as a like passionate calling long term, but thus far it seems like the best match between thing that I enjoy doing, thing that does not cause me too much undue stress and annoyance, and thing that pays me enough money to be able to live the kind of lifestyle that I enjoy living.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of the best version that I found so far. And because I know I don't think I will feel that way if I ever switch into a management role within software engineering, seeing that validation and markers of success coming through from especially senior leadership folks has been good, in that it kind of sounds like I'll probably have to carve my own career, take more of an active path in carving a career that maintains those things that I like about it, specifically given that I don't think I ever wanted to go into management. More and more places nowadays have principal engineer roles and stuff like that. And
being an individual contributor is still very valid.
It's more possible now than it feels like it was, from what I've heard, about like 10, 15 years ago. But nonetheless, like, collecting all these different pieces of validation that I can use as proof points to myself internally, and also proof points externally to, yes, there is value that can be brought to company by letting me do this thing. Let me continue to do the kind of job that I like to do, rather than just falling sort of having to do the same work that you have to do in order to do the traditional markers of success and progression. But in my case, it's more about carving an alternate path. And also, candidly, because I like doing software engineering stuff, and I like thinking about technical problems, but like, I don't really want to, even in the principal engineer world, where it's like, okay, well, the idea is you eventually grow and you continue to grow and own or have influence over more and more parts of the company.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do I necessarily want to do that? Maybe, but also maybe not. Maybe I just like, no, I just kind of want to work in my own little corner, but
yeah. I mean, the thing that I love the most about dev work, frankly, is cleaning things up. And like, I know most devs hate doing stuff like that, but I love going in and being like, you know, maybe we need to use our design framework components a bit more on our front end. Maybe we should uniform. That's actually something I'm bringing up right now to my team, is how we need to uniform all of our Booleans so that our code logic is outside of the front end and is as clean as possible. Mm-hmm. And like small things like naming systems, you know, and how do we name our stuff? And I love that tiny nitpicky granular cleanup thing. Like, the thing that I like the most is trying to get the code to be as close to example code on the website as, like, I want it to be a template for how to do something that is very sterile and like clean and textbook, you know, instead of making like big new projects or something. I just want clean code most of the day.
Yeah. What stuff? I definitely find myself, I think the two areas that I find myself gravitating towards the most is, I definitely do love thinking about systems in the sense of like both literally distributed systems and blah, blah, blah. But like more broadly the, okay, here's a whole bunch of different pieces. How do these pieces interact? What'll be interesting to see in my own career progression is right now, I think what I love is I love understanding systems. And there's part of me, and maybe this still ends up being true, that some sort of like, I love incidents. And part of what originally showed off me to our VP was hopping in and helping out with our senior engineering managers diagnose problems in other systems, not even ones that we owned, but like being able to follow the logs and figure out where the problem is. This is who we need to page. And so like, there's part of me that's like, maybe like an SRE thing at some point, because I do love the, here's a complicated system, figure out what's going on with it as quickly as possible is more enjoyable to me than here is a problem, design a system that will be able to make that problem be solved. Systems design, I'm less interested in at the moment than systems archaeology, I guess. Yeah. So that'll be an interesting thing where it's like, especially on the principal engineer track or whatever, you're expected to be more involved in the upfront design of systems rather than how do you manage and peel apart and understand existing systems. So there's that one part of the thing that I'm interested in. The other thing that I love is like, I love writing like libraries and tools for other developers. What I'm curious about is that a thing that's going to continue to be true? Because part of it, I wonder, is that that is the opportunity to do the most product managey things in a development space, because it's like, oh, I know who my customers are. They're the other developers on my team who are asking for this thing. I can still exercise some of those like customer facing muscles in the design of software products, or at the level of designing library APIs and stuff like that is, those are the two that I'm very curious of, like, will that continue to be true long term? Or is that a, where I'm at currently is I don't know enough about system design to be good at it. And so therefore I don't like the design part as much as the archaeology part, and the, am I still too much of a product manager? And so I'm doing the closest thing that a product manager can do in a backend dev role, which is writing libraries for other backend devs.
Yeah. Success.
Success. But yeah, I mean, and also I guess neither one of those would follow the traditional understandings of success in a, or if you wanted to be a traditionally successful engineer, well, I would go focus on AI or something like that or whatever.
Sure.
I would aim on a management track. I would focus on AI or some other hot flashy thing. Maybe I'd be a full stack person so that I could do more like founding engineer type roles.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Or, but no, I like my little incident response and my library writing.
Yeah. And I mean, that kind of gets back to like your woodworking and how you're enjoying doing it versus trying to career plan.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Which I think I subscribe to that notion a little bit.
Yeah.
How have you not talked about any philosophical ways of thinking quite yet in this success podcast?
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I guess part of it is also that just like, as what I sort of half jokingly, but half seriously said before around like whatever makes you feel happy at your lot in life. And for a lot of people that involves feeling like your life was worth something. And then from there, it just fractals into a trillion billion different things that is different for every person. But
you want to push back the word happy versus fulfilled.
Fulfilled maybe is a better, well, I guess fulfilled in the sense that like, I guess I would take with skepticism anyone who can be totally fulfilled while being very unhappy. So I think they are different things. You're probably right. But I think that like an element of happiness is necessary for fulfillment.
I would say it's more a positive word for a symptom of fulfillment.
Okay.
It is a positive word for byproduct or symptom.
Yeah. Okay. So sort of maybe I'm saying that you can't be fulfilled unless you're happy, whereas you're saying you probably can't be happy unless you're fulfilled.
Not exactly. I think happiness is fleeting and momentary, and fulfillment is a longer lasting, sustainable thing.
Okay. Sure. Okay. I think we're sort of just like having different.
Yeah. We're just being pedantic, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that though. I think that makes sense. But yeah, because I mean, successful in your job, successful in your life, successful in. Yeah.
We have focused almost exclusively right now on job or passion related things when it comes to success.
What would be other aspects of success outside of those? Or what do you see as other ones?
Relationships. I mean, people, the two kinds of success are within you and without, you know, and like internal is career, passion, the things you do, and external is like the community you build around you and the people you have in it.
Interesting. Okay. I like that because to me, I don't necessarily see any, like in my head, if I think about success or lack thereof, that doesn't enter into it at all.
The word success when applied to a community is a weird thing. But people describe like your lives of like, oh, he's got a wife and kids. Like that's success, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the definition of success is you're married, you have a good career, you're well off is success. And part of that is the relationship aspect, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's a very good one to point out because it is hitting me that like I don't see that as adding
it's
into
it's not necessarily I agree with it, but that is
totally
expected.
Totally. And I don't see that adding into my own personal definition of success in the way that like am incredibly, incredibly happy and glad that I am in a loving relationship right now. Like that's great. And to not have that would be a worse life, especially now that I know how good it is. But that doesn't necessarily change my definition to like I would not necessarily have put that in as part of a success element in an interesting way.
I think we're and this is complete conjecture. I know you very well. We're in a similar boat of like I know at least the way how I look at relationships, romantic ones, are I don't have like I don't know, a hole in my heart that needs to be filled. I want to have a partner to help to add into our each other's lives. You know, like
yeah.
I am a whole person. They are a whole person. And together we are more than two people, but it's not, I don't believe in the, oh, you're the other half of my heart sort of thing. I have, I guess, a more individualistic notion of relationships.
Co-signed 100%. I think that's the same way that I feel.
Yeah, which is, I guess, to your point of it's funny because I had a friend of mine who was talking to me about my life and things that were going on, and he was like, well, I mean, you are getting 29. You do got to start taking things more seriously. And I was like, I don't know if I agree with that of like having a committed relationship isn't necessarily the goal, you know? I would like that. I don't necessarily think it's like a, oh, you're getting up there. You're at that age now where you should start thinking about settling down. Before this podcast, we had a whole conversation about it. But if it happens, it happens. Great. That's fucking amazing. And I'm thrilled. If it doesn't, that's very sad. But I don't think I would define that as failure versus success, you know?
Yeah.
Also, introducing that word into this conversation.
I was about to say, yeah, that's a good point. That like, does defining something as a state of success inherently require there must be a corresponding state of failure? And if there isn't a failure state, then it can't be success. That's a proposition. I'm sort of saying that out loud as I'm thinking about it. And I guess I kind of think that's true because if something can't be failed, then I wouldn't necessarily call it, say that was a case of like, oh, well, it succeeded. It would be like, it happened or it was good or I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then if that is true, I suppose, what would I see as career or passion failure? I guess I already talked about like the passion failure part being like, I feel like I want to do something notable and creatively respected and haven't, and or are not working towards that. And therefore that feels like either a failure or a not yet succeeding. Maybe it would be a failure if it continues to not be succeeded, even if it not isn't necessarily at the point yet where you can say it has definitively failed.
I push back against that idea of it is a failure if you changed your mind about wanting to be a screenwriter. That's not failure.
Yes, right? I would agree with that. Yes. So more specifically, what I would say is that while I still have the same definition of success, it is a failure. If I change the definition of success, then it no longer becomes a failure. But I think I'm still operating a little bit where it's like, I haven't given up that definition yet. Therefore, that's why it still feels a bit like a failure.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess I could. So then going back to the job thing, which again, all we're talking about is jobs and passions. What would make me feel like a failure? I think I would feel like a failure if I knew that I was doing a not very good job of stuff according to like, this is the job is to do this thing, you can do the job well or not, according to either a supervisor's definition or the average definition that one would based on how the job is defined. And I think, yeah, if I knew that I was consistently, I think actually that's a good point. Even if other people were saying you were doing a good job, if I knew I personally wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess I'm like, see, I'm of two minds. I was going to say, then I would still feel like I was failing at that element of like career success, such as it is. But at the same time, like, well, if everyone says that you're doing a good job, maybe you're wrong. And that what you think is failure is actually good enough or fine or good.
Yeah.
I guess I would also consider like, if I was, given, I guess, if, as mentioned before, my career goals are what is the thing I like to do, doesn't extend out of work hours, and pays me enough money to live the lifestyle that I would like to live, then if I wasn't doing something to try and get it to be one of those things or switch into another job or role that did those, I think I wouldn't feel like a failure until I got to the point where I gave up and said like, oh, I want this thing, but I'll never be able to get it. But then that gets you into that point where it's like, well, are you redefining your notions of success? It doesn't feel like a failure until I have accepted it as failure. But once you accept it as failure, then does it cease to become failure because you're no longer stability?
Yeah. Also, I mean, I think we're trying to apply like the word success to a continuous thing versus a single action. Right? Of like, oh, did I jump 5 feet in the standing long jump? It's a very clear success and failure to that statement. Is my life a failure? Is like such a ineffable question, you know?
I suppose the thing you can only judge when it's done. Like you can't, unless you're doing like, is it up to this point?
And even then,
every point continues to move on.
Is any life a failure? Like, I don't know.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. Cause it's, if, I mean, we both, it seems like personally feel that like there is no universal, this is the,
absolutely not.
Like, yeah. That it is
don't make this much money by X year. You're a failure. No.
Fuck yeah. That it's entirely like, do you feel like a success or a failure? How do you define it for yourself? And therefore, how are you living up to your own boundaries that you've defined? In that context, then on the one hand, it's like, well, you could never judge if a life is a, because like, yeah, like you said that like success or failure is a point in time thing as opposed to a continuous thing. Therefore you would never be able to judge success or failure until there is no more points in time to be able to judge it by, namely you've died at that point. But also if you're the only one defining your own success or failure,
it
doesn't matter because you're not around to do the judging.
Yeah.
You listen to Cortex, right?
Not lately, but I have listened to it.
Getting at the idea of like the theme, yearly themes as opposed to resolutions idea. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
For I suppose, the sake of the listening public, all 2.5 of them, the idea on that podcast being like, resolutions are bad because resolutions set you up for failure by tying it to, actually, very more related than I thought it would be. A resolution is like, I will do X by Y date. And therefore, when you don't do X, or you do X too late, then you feel like a failure and that's bad. Instead, what you want is a theme. And what a theme is just a gentle thing that's like in the back of your head being like, when you're making individual decisions, you can apply that theme and say, well, this is what I kind of wanted my year to focus on. Does this get me closer or further away from that idea? Ideally, you try and do more of the closer ones and less of the far away ones.
Yeah.
But you can't fail a theme in the way that you can fail a resolution. Similarly, then, success or failure on your own personal level, my guess is the healthiest approach to it is to treat it sort of that same way of a theme of like, here is a thing that I think I want to aim for. I should keep that in mind and try and do more of the things that get me closer to that thing and fewer of the things that get me further away from it. And success in life can never really be failed if you're thinking about it that way, in which case then I guess it's not really success or failure.
Yeah, which I mean, I it's not success or failure. Like, I understand, I agree with it's not failure.
Yeah.
It's, is it also not success?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess in that, with the caveat of still feeling having some residual level of emo-ness around creative stuff and still feeling a little bit like a failure in that world. By and large, I think I feel successful.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, maybe the answer to that one is redefine such that it just no longer feels like failure.
Yeah.
Or maybe give up everything and move to LA on a hope and a dream.
Hell yeah. Let's do it. I'm already in New York City.
Do you feel successful?
Do I feel successful? Yes, I do feel successful. It changes from day to day, from time to time, especially when I'm like just finishing a show, which I did 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I start to get the itch of, oh God, what am I doing? If I quit acting tomorrow, no one would care or notice but me. But yeah, I would say I'm successful. I'm further than I ever thought I would be 10 years ago. That's for sure.
That's a good way of putting it.
How about you?
I think similar. Yeah, I think this is similar. I'm further than I thought I would have been 10 years ago is a very good yardstick for, generally speaking, feeling very successful of like, by the goals that I have set for my own career, which is I enjoy it and it pays me enough money and I don't have to work outside of work hours. Very successful. Like I would not have thought I would be able to get that by 29, get to that as if you had asked me in like 2016 or whatever. But then the areas in which there is still that lingering 10% feeling of failure is those things where it's like, oh, if you had asked me 10 years ago, I would have thought that I would have gotten much farther and continued to do more artistic stuff in a way that I haven't. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's the good yardstick, is the success feels very successful because I've gotten further than I ever thought that I would. And the failure feels like failure in that I have gotten so much less far than I thought I would.
Sure. That's fair. I don't think you're a failure.
Well, thank you.
Each to their own.
Thank you. Well, if you would like to help make this show a wild success, then you can tell all of your friends about it and tell them that they can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are found, whether that is Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I think they are renaming Google Podcasts to something else, but I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. So wherever people on Android find podcasts, I guess. do that there. You can also find us at our website, which is theadub.club. That's theadub.club. There you can find our topics guide, which is the list of all the things that we have ever talked about. And you can click on those and I'll take you to the episodes where that topic is mentioned. You can also find our starter guide, which is a list of episodes that we think are particularly good starter ones if you have a new friend that you would like to introduce to the show, or if this is your first episode and you want to pick out a couple of the other ones that kind of give you a good sense of what our vibe is. You can email us at theaw.club. That's theawclub@gmail.com. We will read your emails on the air if they are not spam. And if they are spam, sometimes we will as well. Have we gotten any emails? No. And that's why I can make that promise. And I believe that is everything, because I should just delete our Twitter account because it's a terrible, terrible website.
And with that, ADUB Club out.
ADUB Club out. I'll do the intro, but you can be the one, since it is your topic after all.